Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
Every couple fights, and many of those arguments revolve around the topic of money. In most marriages, one person is the spender, while the other is the saver. Now, that automatically creates conflict, doesn't it? Despite how differently you and your spouse view money, it cannot be something that divides you or creates resentment in your marriage. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh. Today, you're going to hear a conversation Dr. Dobson had recently with Mary Hunt. Mary is a popular motivational speaker and award-winning author. Some of her more recognized books include Debt Proof Your Marriage and A Smart Woman's Guide to Planning for Retirement. Mary Hunt is the founder of Debt Proof Living online and Everyday Cheapskate as well, which is a blog providing tips on how to cut costs and save money on everyday items. Mary has appeared on Good Morning America, Dateline, and Dr. Phil for her knowledge and advice on tackling monetary issues that arise in marriages. Today, she will share how she personally dealt with massive amounts of credit card debt and how she got out of that debt and also challenges others now to do the same. Let's listen now to part one of the program that we've titled Resolving Money Conflicts in Marriage on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
You were a spendaholic. Oh. You spent money like crazy, and you almost wrecked your marriage, didn't you?
I did. Both of those things are absolutely true. You know, Dr. Dobson, I came into my marriage with some very, very misguided beliefs. One of them was that my husband would make all the money I needed, that my job would be to spend it, and if there was ever a shortage, that was his problem and his fault. And I started just spending like crazy on credit.
On what?
You know, I wish I could tell you all the wonderful things that I bought, but it was just a constant living beyond our means. It was it was stuff for the house. It was stuff for him. It seemed noble at the time. You know, it was to get ahead and to keep up with everybody. And of course, then when we had children, there were a lot of financial emergencies. And it doesn't take a lot of overspending to get yourself in terrible, terrible trouble. The key is doing it all the time and keep adding it on. It's a snowball effect.
If you can't live within your means, no amount of money is enough.
That's right. You are absolutely right. Because as far as I'm concerned, money is like a magnifying glass. It only makes the situation worse. If you're doing well with your investments and you're building a life and you're giving to God and you're saving, more money is going to increase that. It's going to make it better.
Yeah.
But if you're spending beyond your means and you're in a horrible, horrible mess, you can never, ever have enough, more money is just going to put you deeper into that problem.
You were $100,000 in debt at one point.
I had run up more than $100,000 in credit card and personal debt. The mortgage. This was not the secured debts at all. And, you know, Dr. Dobson, that was quite a few years ago. If you translate that to today's dollars plus interest plus penalties, we're talking closer to $200,000 that we did pay back every single dime.
And the interest at that time was even higher than it is
today. Much higher. We went through all those years with, you know, the different administrations and the economy, how it goes up and down. You're absolutely right.
And you were depressed over it.
Oh, horribly. But always thinking I could fix it. Always thinking that another scam, another scheme, another thing that I could get into would fix it, and another secret from my husband, and another way that I could fix this situation and fix him and fix our lives in the process. And it just drug us down.
You used the word scam. How did you?
Well, I shouldn't maybe say scam, but we got pulled into, and I say my choice, you know, I take full responsibility, multi-level marketing, get rich quick ideas, these things that would come along on the television, people call you up, people want to meet with you to give you their latest pyramid thing. I mean, all of those things, I got involved with them. I was so desperate to be rich. I wanted to be rich.
Well, what did it do to your marriage? Because that's really kind of the theme of this book that sets it off from some of the others that you've done. It has to do with financial difficulty and marriage.
Right. I would say it builds a wall that becomes so thick that some people, and I believe too, that it was impenetrable, that this wall grew up between us. I don't know how else to describe it.
Was he angry at you?
Very angry at me. And I've had people say, well, why did he let you do that? And I go, well, what were his choices? He could leave me, but he was an honorable man. He stood by our vows. He would never leave me. He could break my arms, but he would not touch me. He was not a violent man. So
how
what does he have left?
How about cutting up your credit cards?
Oh, I mean, I did that voluntarily.
Oh, you did it.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And
I
then you
do
got
that.
More of them.
Of course. I knew how to get them back. I mean, cutting them up is not the solution unless there's something that's going to come along behind that.
Yeah. You said a minute ago that you paid every bit of that back.
Every bit.
How in the world did you do it?
It took a long time. It took us 12 years to get into the mess. It took 13 years to get out. But I can tell you that I can't explain it. I had a real turning point. Now, I knew the Lord. I had accepted Christ as my Savior as a young child. So it wasn't a salvation experience. But I can tell you that I came to a point when I think that when I was at the bottom of myself, and I had nowhere to turn. I turned to the Lord and I turned to God and I said, I will do anything, anything. And I think it was at that point I was willing to let the head knowledge invade my life and to become really a part of my life. And I know this sounds silly. People will say there's no way possible. Maybe not, but we saved our way back to financial health. We started obeying God. We started giving back, even though we didn't know where the next dime was coming from. We started saving.
I know what happened. You had a rich relative who died and gave you all the money, and then you didn't have any more problems. Hmm. Is that right?
I haven't heard from that person yet.
Were you waiting for that?
You know, that would have been nice, and there are some who say we should have filed for bankruptcy. I'm not going to say we didn't even consider that. I don't know that we would have been eligible. I think we probably would have been. I'm so grateful we didn't, because I would have never known how God intended to become faithful in our lives in the way that He has promised. He has promised to do that.
Really?
Absolutely.
And you have proved it.
I have proven it.
Well, you're talking to people right now who don't have a clue as to where they go from here. I mean, there's so many people out there who are in this mess.
You
they
know,
hadn't
that's right.
even planned, perhaps, to have heard this conversation today. And they have continually overspent their income and have gotten into a hole that looks like it's bottomless.
And, you know,
talk
what
to
I
them.
Have,
give them some encouragement.
You know, what I have to say to you today, to these wonderful, precious people, is I know where you are. I know what it feels like to not to want to go home. Because the mail might have arrived before you got there, and your husband's going to find out about your secret debts, or that your wife is going to find out what is really happening. That you don't know how you're going to pay the rent, you're going to pay the mortgage. I mean, there's absolutely no hope. You really, truly believe that. But I know the truth, that there is always hope. There is always a way out. And God has given me the most wonderful opportunity to help people.
Mm.
And I think that He has taken the brokenness of my life. I guess that's why God uses broken vessels. Because it's not me. I mean, God has chosen to allow me now to help other people out. And it's the joy and passion of my life.
What is that brokenness like? What's the depression like to wake up in the middle of the night and there it is? You wake up the next morning, it's the first thing you think about. Somebody's at the front door making a demand. People are calling. Your kids are picking up the phone and they don't know what to say. Describe that as
you know,
best you can.
I recall it as being a physical pain. I mean, a real physical pain in my stomach. It felt like someone had clamped a wrench on, and it was just a pain that would not let go. That deep blackness that you feel like there's no way out, and you feel like you're just being drawn down and pulled down into a deep, deep, dark pit. And it's a physical, it's not just a mental knowing, it is a physical feeling, and it's awful. It's just horrible.
Well, you said that you turned to the Lord.
I did.
And He was there. How did He begin to help you, and what did you do to help yourself?
You know, I will not even begin to tell you that it was some kind of a white miracle that came flying through the window and everybody forgot our bills and I had a brand new clean slate. And in a moment of time, all of our debts were forgiven. It just didn't happen that way. In fact, that day that I fell on my face and poured out my heart to God, first time in my life realizing that it was me, it was deceit, manipulation, asking for forgiveness. I got up and I can't say the pain went away. It didn't. I didn't know what I was going to do. I still didn't know how I was going to talk to my husband. But I knew I'd been forgiven. That was the difference. I knew I'd been forgiven.
Did you go find a job?
I went back to work. My husband stayed home with the kids for 2 years. Now, did we go to counseling and get this all figured out?
Mm-hmm.
No, and if we had, we might have done a little bit better job and gotten out sooner. We were embarrassed. We were ashamed. We didn't think anyone else in the whole world had ever gone through this. But what I want people to know is God will bring the opportunities. I have to tell you, I never, ever aspired to be a writer. I never dreamed that I could speak. I never, ever knew that I had those abilities and talents. I think that God has created in each one of us special things, talents, bents, abilities that he can use for his glory. All he's asking is for us to be willing. And it had to come to that point in my life that I would be willing. And the opportunities came. I went back to work. I learned an industry that I never dreamed of, industrial commercial real estate. But God used that mightily in my life. He taught me how hard it is to make a living. And I think it was when I started bringing home the money that my heart started to change about how we would spend this money. That now I was willing to say, yeah, we're not going to spend that much money. We're going to start watching where it's going to go. I became a willing partner in this marriage, where in the past I had been a very rebellious partner, doing everything I could because I felt I had married someone so different from me that I had to fix this whole thing.
You were trying to meet a need with spending, weren't you?
I sure was.
There was something down there that you were trying to compensate for.
I was trying to find satisfaction and fill a longing in my heart that could never, ever, ever be filled with money or with things.
Talk now about the theme of this book with regard to what financial difficulties do to a marriage. I mean, you have said here that it may be the number one reason people get divorced.
It is, but let me just explain that a bit. If it was just money, there wouldn't be any marriages ever, because every marriage, every partnership comes to a time when they have financial challenges. So that's not the cause. The cause of a divorce, number one, in this country is when a couple do not have the tools. They do not have the ability to solve those financial conflicts. They don't know what to do about it. And so they go off into their own corners and they try to fix it themselves. That is the number one thing, when they don't know how to solve the problem. I think that that's what I want to help couples realize, is that you've got everything. If you have a loving marriage, and even if it's not loving right now, if there was a time when the two of you came together and you were lovingly committed to one another, you have what it takes to turn your marriage around.
And it begins with repentance, and it begins with openness with
one
another.
I think it begins with the relationship. Yeah. I think that money problems in a marriage are very rarely just about money.
Do you think young people today are less equipped to deal with money than 20, 30, or 40, or 50 years ago?
I really do. I hate to say that, but I really do, because we're raising the first generation who've grown up with plastic. They've seen their parents use plastic from the moment they were born. They go to college. They come out with student loans and with a lot of credit card debt. And there's a lot of entitlement issues. And they are not required to face it and to realize what that really, truly means. They come into a marriage bringing all this debt with them. I mean, as bad as our situation was, we started out our marriage completely debt-free. I mean, we didn't start in the hole.
Yeah.
So now couples coming together and having expectations of a big wedding and the honeymoon and all those trappings of life that our society says you can have, you deserve, and here's how to do it. Just have a little bit more debt.
You know, I don't want to sound like I've got all the answers and haven't struggled where other people have, but I had a fear of debt when Shirley and I got married. We didn't have any financial problems because we didn't have any finances. We started with $100 between us, and that had to last for a month until we both got our first paychecks. We'd both just gotten out of college and started teaching, and it was about 6 weeks there where we didn't have anything coming in. We had $100, and we ate wieners and beans and things like that. But I never let us get into a hole. We bought a television set that first year, and I paid for it at $25 a month, and I thought I was in debt up to my ears.
Yeah.
That was a burden to me. And I had a $750 loan from graduate school, and I paid that back at, I think, $12 per quarter. And 1 month, I forgot it. And I was, I think, 3 or 4 months late, and I called the University of Southern California to apologize. And I said, you know what? I just absolutely forgot that $12 payment. And they said, are you kidding? You're the only one that pays it. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
But I had a real sense of the danger of credit. Today, young people don't seem to, like you said, they don't seem to appreciate that. They don't recognize how quickly you get in a hole when you're paying credit card interest. It's like carrying water farther and farther from the well.
It is. Mm. You know, but my experience has been that even with all of this that I've said, how couples start in the hole, I think that one thing hasn't changed. Marriage attracts opposites. And usually there's a spender and there's a saver. And I mean the mentality.
Yeah.
I would say in your marriage, you definitely were the saver. You're very conscious of that kind of thing. My husband, exactly the same way. So it wasn't that one of us wasn't at least thinking properly. It's just that one of us was very, very rebellious, very, very naughty.
Yeah.
And so I would say even in a marriage where there's a lot of financial problems, I think if we could dissect this couple, we would find out that one of them has a saver's mentality, one has a spender's mentality. A saver mentality means this. If you see something on sale, you go, wow, I don't have to spend so much money.
And the spender can always spend more than
that's
the
right.
saver
now,
can
I'm a
save.
Spender, and that's right. And I look at something, I go, wow, a sale. That means I can have more stuff.
Yeah.
It's just the way that we look at things.
Okay, let's address that individual who's listening again that's in this horrible hole. The debt is just impossible. They don't think they can ever deal with it. Where do they start?
You know, the very first thing probably has nothing to do with money. Because I have a feeling in that situation has been a breakdown of the trust in the marriage. The communication has broken down. That couple needs to come together, especially if one has been doing some secret spending. They have to get the relationship fixed. And I talk about that in the first half of the book. It's all about the relationship.
Yeah, it says on the cover again, how to achieve financial harmony.
That's right. You've got to be in a position where you're able to make the harmony in order to achieve it. And I really, truly believe, now, Dr. Dobson, I've learned most of everything I know from you when it comes to psychology. But I do know that men, males, are created with a need. They need to be respected and admired.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And if a man is not respected and admired, he closes down. And when he closes down, he loses touch with the money and he gets angry and he goes off. And the same thing with a woman. She needs more than anything to be adored and to feel affection from her
That's
husband
right out
every
of the
day.
Scripture.
Absolutely. And I look at my own life, and then I have talked with so many couples and looked at so many marriages. And when those two people are not having those most deep emotional needs met is when things start going crazy with the money.
You talk about five stages of marriage.
Yeah.
Explain it.
Yeah. Stage one I call is that ooey gooey time. This starts in the courtship. Yeah. You know, we're perfect. We are soulmates.
How do you spell ooey gooey?
Ooey gooey. A lot of O's in there. But you know, I'm sure you experienced that. You know what it's like. It's that romantic, wonderful time of life.
Yeah.
Stage two usually kicks in about the second week, perhaps. Some people get through the first year where they're still having that wonderful first stage of marriage. All of a sudden, there's kind of a wake up. Goes, wow, who's this person I married? And instead of looking at it as a challenge to get to know this person better, sometimes we look at it as I made a mistake. And so then the third stage of marriage comes in that says, I love you, honey, but I'm going to change you. I want to fix you. I want to send in the spouse improvement committee, and I'm going to fix this thing. And it's during this third stage of marriage that can last for 10, 12, 15 years is when we're making decisions about children and family and all of those things, about money and about debt and about credit and where we're going to live. And it's the time when that debt and the finances can really get out of whack. Most marriages, if they're going to end in divorce, happen in that third stage before the seventh year is when most divorces happen. Couples who will hang on through the fourth stage of marriage is that surrender. It just says, you know what, I'm just going to accept it. I'm going to surrender. He's who he is. I am who I am. And that's how it's going to be, which leads us then to that wonderful fifth stage of marriage. We see people in that where they've returned to the first. They're romantically in love. They realize that they had it all along. The person that I fell in love with, I still love so deeply.
Now, some people listening to us would say, I thought you were talking about money. You're talking about love, and you're talking about counseling and marriage and so on. You see a linkage between
I
those
do,
two.
Because I see that in stage one and stage five are when money problems are easily taken care of. And my message in this book is that you can go from stage 1 to 5. You don't have to go through that horrible, horrible time. If you are meeting each other's needs, you are committed as a couple, and you see your marriage like a business, that you're financial partners, and you're going to do this, you can go straight to stage 5. You can enjoy wonderful times of financial harmony in your marriage. It can happen. And I'm telling you, when the relationship is right, everything else will come so easily, so quickly. I've seen it happen.
You say in here that you really ought to address some of these issues before you say, I do.
You really should. Maybe that'll be another book, huh?
In terms of premarital counseling.
Absolutely.
And dealing with money in premarital counseling.
You've got to
deciding
know this
how you're going to determine how you spend the money.
Who makes
the final decision and under what circumstances?
Well, I guess the best part of the book that I love is teaching a couple. And I want people to understand, even if your spouse is certainly not interested in even talking about this at this point, I truly believe it only takes one person to affect a change in a relationship. You can start respecting and admiring that man, even though you think there's nothing respectable about him. There is. You can find something. You can look back to that first stage of your marriage and find something. You can start respecting him, and he's going to be shocked out of his mind. And his response will be to show you affection.
Mary, what should your husband, Harold, his name is Harold, right? What should he have said when he saw that you were out of control?
Oh, I've thought about this a lot. I have to say, Dr. Dobson, and I don't want to sit here and condemn my husband. I don't want to condemn myself. But I really, truly believe that if I would have seen in black and white what I was doing to our lives, I had no idea the power of compounding interest.
And could he have gotten that across to you? Were you listening?
I believe that I would have listened. I do.
If he'd approached you in a loving way and not in an angry way.
I think so.
He did have a lot to say to you.
No, because his response to all of it was to close down. And so there was no communication going on. And so I was off in my own little world imagining and trying to fix, and he was off in his. And I'm telling you, this wall just built up between us. But I truly believe that if I would have seen in black and white what saving, if we would have only saved $100 a month back starting in 1970 when we got married, that would have spoken volumes to me, because I was very, very ignorant about money. I was just so anxious to have what I want right now. If he would have sat down and said, look, we can have these things that we want in our lives, not doing it on debt, by saving for it, we just weren't wise enough to be able to communicate to each other that way. And we were both to blame. I'm not going to say that I was the only one, and it certainly wasn't him. But I think in any marriage, of course, both parties are party to what is happening in that marriage.
Would it have been a good idea to bring in a third party at that point?
I am absolutely certain if both of us would have been willing to do that.
Yeah.
And there are credit counselors available. There are wonderful organizations. There's a lot of shysters out there. You've got to be very, very careful. But there are good, solid organizations. There's counseling that can be had. There are books that you can read. And I've got to tell you, it's the most exciting thing to see a couple turn their financial situation around, because it happens so quickly.
Mary, there's a lot more here we need to talk about. Can you stay with us another day?
I would be honored.
All right. Let's just pick up right here next time.
I'll be right here.
You have been listening to a conversation Dr. James Dobson had with author Mary Hunt here on Family Talk. To find out more about Mary's books on finances or her helpful blogs, go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Once again, that's drjamesdobson.org, and then click onto today's broadcast tab. While you're visiting our website, we also encourage you to check out our blogs that we have posted there. Our writers cover a variety of topics such as parenting, making marriage last, living a single life, and how to pass on a godly heritage to your children. You can find what you need when you go to drjamesdobson.org and then go to our blogs tab. As we end this Wednesday edition of Family Talk, we'd like to remind you that we are a listener-supported ministry, and we rely on God through your tax-deductible financial contributions. We understand that times may be tough for you and budgets might be a little tight, but every dollar you are able to give will have a great impact on those that we reach with our radio program. You can go online to drjamesdobson.org and make a donation there. Or if you prefer, you can call 877 877- 732-6825 to make your gift over the phone. Again, that toll-free number is 877-732-6825. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for your faithful financial support, your prayers, and also for tuning into today's broadcast. Be sure to join us again tomorrow to hear part two of Dr. James Dobson's conversation with author and financial expert Mary Hunt, as she will provide sensible steps to saving money and getting out of debt. That's coming up next time right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi everyone, Dr. Tim Clinton here for Family Talk. Are you on the go without much time to log in to all your social media pages? Twitter's a great way for staying informed on the things that matter most to you with just a quick look on your phone. Follow Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Receive great tips, resources, information, inspiration that's important to you in short, simple tweets. Again, that's Dr. James Dobson, capital F, capital T, on Twitter.